You got to be here a lot of years to get all of that. Surprise. It's Friday night and we're live.
Yes, sir.
Surprise. I just thought I would come and check up and see if you were going to do what 29 years has been done by this church. Breathe a sigh of relief. The crisis is not over, but seems to have reached a turnaround point. So we can all go home and party on Friday night, and there'd be no Voices of Faith here, and nobody at their post. You've done it too many times, and I don't want you to do it this time. Last night we had about 17 people. Voices of Faith in here, we were full. Back in the VGR room, where the tapes are played and the engineering broadcast center for the live show, we had about 17 people. I think we had 8 upstairs crowding around the director's booth and the sound booth and the place where the music is fed in. That's the way I want it. Don't necessarily need that many every night, but I want people trained until we always have a bench to call upon and we can function with volunteers if all else fails. Now we're going to be in the cathedral Sunday. There's room for about 50 more reservations to reach the quota, 49 to be exact. And we should get those tonight. I hope some of you that have made commitments, we haven't been able to get back to all of the people, but you that have made commitments to come and be trained as camera people, you get down to the cathedral tomorrow night. What time are they supposed to be there for those that are training for cameras?
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock? And you get there at 6 o'clock, not 6:05, 6 o'clock. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
I want to be able to not rest. That's why I'm here tonight. I want to secure the ground that we have made. And it will only be done if you understand you've made commitments to God to be affected under my leadership, but you've made commitments to God. And some of you are still sitting on the fence. You're only going to go one direction, either forward or backwards. God says he'll spew you out of his mouth if you're lukewarm. He'd rather have you against him than that hypocritical no-no land, just sitting and making no progress. So get on the telephone. Let's start the festival right. I want to do some teaching tonight, so let's see if we can jam these phones up right off the bat. Get on the phone. Now, we started Secret 16 over again. We did the things that I intended to do when I started Secret 16 last year. I'm not even scratch the surface and tabulating. But you can't go anywhere in this ministry now without seeing the product of Secret 16, certainly in this studio. I mean, some of you have probably forgotten what the studio used to be like. All you got to do is look at the ceiling, look at these flat screen TVs, look at the phone banks, look at the new cameras. You can't go upstairs and look at the new sound system. The new sound system at the cathedral. New lighting. I mean, we're talking sound system between 150 and 200,000 at the cathedral alone. New roofs on every single property. Small fortune, almost, between $300,000 and $400,000. We hadn't put new roofs on for 8 years. I mean, if we're well into the winter, you haven't had to wade through water in here this year, have you?
No, sir.
You went to the Shalom service. You don't have to wade through water over there. Terrible. The leaks that we had in the cathedral and the way it endangered the irreplaceable Bible manuscripts. That's the kind of non-glamorous activity. Maintenance. I'm not about to retire. I'm not ready to go home yet. So I determined to shore up this ministry in all departments, including some that many of you never see, you just hear. Advances at various locations. That was Secret 16. I'm not telling you what Secret 17 is. But your pledges are going to be a repeat of Secret 16. So Secret 17, I'll just push that off to the following year. We'll just carry forward some other dreams that I had that we'll unveil as the year goes on. Secret 16, we did it. 20% of the funds came in from the pledges. No, maybe 30. This year I want to make it. You remember when we started the secrets? And particularly after Hope Street, I said every year of my ministry I would try to repeat until people would give simply because of a value judgment of the word that they've been taught. That's what it's about. And interestingly enough, we have 79 of the 700 that are giving 3,000, and we have 80 of the 300 giving 10,000. I find that fascinating. Almost the exact same number in each category. And somewhere, Reggie just put both of them, when the music starts, up to 80. I'll have the faith that other. And that's fascinating. More have given 10,000 in their pledges than those giving 3,000. We'll get the 80 tonight and more. So run the ribbons up to 80. We're starting over with Secret 16. You understand that?
Yes, sir.
700 giving 3,000 by Christmas. 300 giving 10,000 by Christmas. I think some of you learned last year you started too late. You didn't give God enough time. Start early this time. Don't worry about, well, I'm going to finish last year's pledge. Forget that. That was then. You're not getting off that easy. I gave 8,000 of the 10, and so I'm going to pledge again and give the 2,000 to finish it. No, you're not. That was your activity of faith in the previous year. Now you just start over. God knows your heart, knows that you tried, knows whatever reason why you had to learn some lessons. This year, flex your faith muscles and say, I'm going for it again. If you didn't make it last year, this time you're going to. You understand?
Yes, sir.
Get on the telephone. Now, I want to say something to the whole network. I'm going to return as often as I can to the 7 o'clock starting time. That's when we started the festivals, when I came here 29 years ago. I like the 7 o'clock time. I sort of like the fact that most of the audience are those that care enough about this ministry to buy a short wave and listen if we're not on local TV. You can buy one for $30 to $50. I don't understand why anybody in my congregation does not have a shortwave radio. You can get a desk model for $200 or $300. They can pick up with the multiple frequencies we have. If one isn't working because of weather conditions, you can pick it up off of another one. Costa Rica, Anguilla, Nashville, Dallas. Everybody should have a short wave. We're moving up in the number. When we have 3,000 KU bands, we have our own DirecTV network. Nobody else can get it. You can't just scan the sky like you do with the Big C-band analog dishes were there and will stay there. GE3 transponder 20, 24 hours a day. But a lot of you can't get the big dish. And really, I think analog is not to be compared to the KU-band digital signal that comes from the KU-band dishes. We have our own transponder. The voice of faith can tell. You can call, go get any satellite installer, a 30 to a 36-inch dish. You can get it with a 30-inch dish. They'll try everything, but usually their problem is they don't get a big enough or a more powerful receiver. If you can't get it where you are clear on the 30-inch dish, you need a stronger receiver. You're still talking less than $600. I have a man in Texas that he installed his father's himself, and it costs less than $200. I've heard prices all the way from $300 to $650. Craig Lamp's been buying them for pastors in Phoenix and just giving it to them. And it's apparently having some effect on them. That's fine. As long as they give credit, they can take a piece of any message that I preach. Saves them a lot of research. But they need to give credit. And if you're watching right now, you remember that. God gives, but he gives to whom he will the gifts. Don't give me that it's all coming from God so I can take it without credit. Well, your home and your paycheck and your car all came from God, so tell me your address, I'll come and take it. Just get off of it. But you need a KU band. We're there 24 hours a day. We're on the internet. Not just the home page, but a live feed straight off the satellite to our various T1 lines that feeds on anybody that's surfing the internet. Go to the home page and you've got two or three entry gates and you can pick up straight off the satellite, the programming 24 hours a day, including right now when we're live. For those people, 7 o'clock is 10 o'clock on the East Coast. So I prefer if I'm going back to live festival time, and among the other things that were part of Secret 16, my wife set up a special study place here in what was a junk loft. I mean, I'd drive in the garage and look the other direction. She cleaned out a junk area in the garage and turned it into a clean and beautiful study loft for me. So I can come here and just come down the stairs and start the festival. It's a little different than having to study miles away and race to get here. So expect more festivals and expect the 7 o'clock hour. And I'm quite sure that programming will begin to shape the bands in the days ahead for a 7 o'clock starting, not an 8 o'clock, a 7 o'clock starting. It's 8:20 now. We started at 8. You can expect me anytime. If I'm studying that loft, I may break into a live program 12 noon or 12 midnight, but I prefer being able to be live where I can communicate with my congregation. Don't have to worry, like I go live at 10 o'clock, it's the on-air full power station here in Los Angeles. We play the Sunday morning messages from the cathedral. And the audience that listens, not quite as understanding of a shepherd that has to whack the butt of the sheep that get out of line once in a while. This is inside. This is us. This is where the pastor can exhort and apply the messages and keep you from slipping back the way you have. Now hold the ground that you have and keep pressing on. And I want these Secret 16 pledges flowing in, the rest of the reservations for Sunday. Obviously you won't get a pass in the mail, but you'll be on the list that we can check off when you come to the gate. We'll be in the cathedral 11 o'clock Sunday. Now, you get on the phone. If you have major reservations, make them now. And I would like some calls of appreciation from the satellite people all across North America. We're going to make 7 o'clock festival time. You voices of faith that are in the habit of coming at 8 o'clock, in case we're live, start coming at 7. It'll take a while to change habit patterns. I know what people will do. Those that have satellites and shortwave will tune in at 7 to see if I'm live. That's why I'm not going to say Monday night. But you're going to see a lot more of me on festival, because you need this direct one-on-one family talk, the spiritual family talk. You need to tune in where I don't have to worry about what strangers are going to think of what I'm saying. I don't really worry. You know, if there's something about a ministry that comes from God, people that God put a receiver in recognize it instantly, no matter what the tone of voice and whether it's coated with sugar or not. But when you're on full power stations and all the various restrictions, I mean, I listened to a chef at a major hotel agonizing today, had 5 hours of spatial meetings the previous day with the attorneys of the chain of hotels, telling them what they couldn't do. They couldn't even raise their voice unduly with an employee. They sure couldn't use any explicatives. They couldn't grab them and shake them. Well, see, there are things that I have to limit myself from doing and saying what you sheep, when you're out of line, need to hear, or saying things about spiritual growth that dead strangers listening don't even have a receiver to tune into. There are things we can do. Like, these are like the old days when we owned the station. And 24 hours a day, any hour of the day, and as long as we wanted, we could do anything. When you were buying time on a full power station, you got to worry. It's like you hear me sometimes say, get ready, engineers, so you can bleep asshole. As if everybody doesn't know what I'm saying. Bleep hole. Now, pretty stupid, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
There are only 7 words that are prohibited, and I can do a good job without those 7. But you have local program directors and owners of the station that care for us, and we care for them. So you sort of, you know, do you do things in your home that you don't do in public?
Yes, sir.
You say things to your wife and your family that you don't say when you're sitting on at a table with 6 other tables around you, breathing down your neck when you take your family out to dinner.
Yes, sir.
You don't act the same way. Well, here, we're home.
Yes, sir.
And by the way, there are no restrictions on satellite. You say anything you want. The 7 words don't even apply. Now, you all know, it's as though those of the old guard that had settled in did not resist the devil, had backslidden. They became Satan's instrument to render between 5 and 7 o'clock, when I was coming to an 8 o'clock festival, to either render me incapable of functioning by the using up of energy units, or put me in such a mood I'd beat you half to death when I got here. You ever had your kids in the terrible twos? Get you as a mother in such a state, you hit your husband when he comes through the door? Not, yes, sir? Figuratively. I mean, you know, he's coming through the door and he's got a real grump serving dinner. You ever get in that state? Yeah, well, I can take my grumpiness out here, but not on Channel 56. I do pretty good on 56, but there are no limits here. We have a new staff. I haven't decided, we'll decide either tomorrow night or Sunday, those that have indicated they mean business. I don't judge people by their talent, I judge them by their attitude. And we have a new beginning, and I will say this for the new people that my wife has assembled. I come into this building and at least have a sense that they're glad I'm here and we're going to do a festival. There were many years when I came in the building, you could almost feel the groan through the whole building from those that had built their little push-button kingdom, and all of a sudden, they're going to have to perform in a live festival. They dreaded it. What a spirit of faith. So now, thanks to my wife, who's made it easier, and the time to study, to put out. I put out 40, 50 hours for Sunday morning. But thanks to her, I have time to study and go back to the festivals that we had when this ministry was built. I'm going to be here every night as it was this week. But there'll be festivals, and they'll be at 7 o'clock, so change your habit patterns and start paying attention and at least check in to see if we're live. And then maybe you'll hear something you hadn't heard if we're not live, and it'll hold you down for a while. So change your habits. One more song, I'm going to start teaching, so make your calls. Hurry up. I thought the president was going to come up and sing with me. That's my friend from back in Pennsylvania. You know, one of the great singers, Beth Ellis, was to Oral Roberts what Dev Shea was to Billy Graham. And this is Beth Ellis' son, our guest at the cathedral. Good friends through the years. But right now, that stopped you from calling, so sit down. I'm going to teach. You know, when I came here, Church on the Rocks, not some spiritual name of a church, Faith Center, with no faith, abandoned by everybody, 105 members vote me in, no faith, on the verge of bankruptcy. And once God settled in my heart, took from November to February before I would finally accept the fact that I had taken on a charge of faith and I had to finish it, just like Jesus finished his trip. I remember when I settled it at the then parsonage up, looking over the freeway in Glendale. And once God settled it in my spirit, with all the problems, knowing that most of those that were involved in staff had to go, they spent most of their time sitting up in what was the engineering crow's nest above King's House 1, analyzing me. They had been the overpaid hirelings, spending the money and putting the church in the debt, and then their You know, one's managing the radio and another's an engineer, this and that. Analyzing me, I knew they had to go. I knew a lot of people had to go. I had a dream. I don't mean a nighttime dream. A dream born in my spirit. And I remember the first time I preached the message on this passage. Jesus once said, not many mighty and not mighty many rich are called. And I really identified with the state of the church then. I identified with David. You go to 1 Samuel 22. I haven't got notes in my Bible preaching this message so many years ago. David had been anointed. Even his family didn't think he was the man. But Samuel, directed by God, anointed him, and you all know the story of him carrying food to his brethren who were fighting with Saul. And Saul and his army are hunkered down in fear, being challenged daily by Goliath and this young teenager. But who is this uncircumcised Philistine? They tried to clothe him with Saul's armor. He went in the power of the Lord and with a slingshot, and I still got up in my office at Faith Center. 5 stones I took out of the brook where David took the stones for his sling. He took enough stones for Goliath and his 4 brothers. He killed Goliath and became the hero. Then Saul became jealous, tried to kill him. And David is fleeing. He does that in his youth, and he does it in his old age when Absalom turned on him. But this is in the days of Saul. David therefore departed thence, chapter 22, and escaped to the cave Adullam. His brethren, his father's house, came down, but he then committed them to the king of Moab later. This is the verse that encompassed the reality that became a dream. And everyone that was in distress, old timers here will remember this, everyone that was in distress, everyone that was in debt, everyone that was discontented, losers all. Losers all. Not many mighty. Everyone that was in distress, everyone that was in debt, everyone that was discontented. What a riffraff. Try to imagine in that cave, David's fleeing from Saul and seeks refuge in this hole in a rock. And in daylight, maybe at night by a fire, he looks around and sees this bunch. He's anointed king, not yet crowned. I first heard my mother preach a message. I need to clean it. First heard my mother preach a message on this. I bought it from her with permission, the title. How David, as a type of Christ, was anointed king, not yet crowned, which is the state of the kingdom of God and our Lord and Savior, who will one day come as King of kings and Lord of lords, anointed, not yet on the throne. He's on a throne up there, but not yet in his rightful place, ruling and reigning over this earth. Anointed, but not yet crowned. Everybody runs to the bandwagon on Coronation Day. But there was nothing attractive about David's condition at that point, as with Faith Center in those ancient days. And only those that had nothing to lose and everything to gain distress, debt, discontent gathered themselves unto him, and he became a captain over them. And there were with him about 400 men, almost four times what I had when I came here, Faith Center. Gathered themselves unto him, and he became a captain over them. And there were with him about 400 men. Looking at them, he had to look to God. And he did. He wrote two psalms from this cave. The head notes by the Masoretes are in error. They have Psalm 56 to the chief musician upon whatever when the Philistines took him in Gath. No, 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 no. They are companion Psalms 56 and 57, both written while he was in that cave, looking at those distressed, discontented debtors who had really not anything to offer him except themselves. They couldn't bring anything except themselves. But he became a captain over them. This is the way their captain looked. He was human. And I have written in my margin, these two Psalms, 56 and 57, as a up and down refrain. He starts out pretty low. That's the first two verses of the 56th Psalm. Don't try to read it yet, because I'm going to go back and pick it apart. Just make these notes in your margin. He's pretty low. Then the third verse is his first position of faith that he takes. Takes his stand. The fifth verse, he slips back into his second human estimate of, I'm sure, while he's writing this psalm, looking at these guys, he goes down. This is what I got, and God anointed me. I was happy tending my father's sheep. Only thing I'd deal with there was lions and bears. Then he looks around at these distressed ones and debtor ones and discontented ones and knows that Saul's out there hunting him, and he slips down. He stays down to the 10th verse and takes a new position of faith. Remember, I've told you many times that David in his early days took longer to get to the position of faith than he did in later years. This is one where he's just up and down. The captain is wavering. Takes his second position of faith in the 10th verse. And he stays there to the end of the 56th chapter. Then he opens the 57th Psalm and slips a third time, minus three. But notice that it's a much shorter bridge where he turns his eyes. He takes another look at those guys he's got and looks outside the cave and knows that Saul's hunting him. But he stays down shorter this time. Now, I've noticed a lot of people around me that God sends, instead of being a problem and non-faith down shorter times, they go down longer times and come back to faith shorter times, just the reverse. But David, he slips the third time with this first verse. Notice how much shorter it is. I mean, he was down that second slip. He was down for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 verses. Now he's down 1. Not even a full verse. He's up for his third position of faith, plus 3, immediately. And that lasts clear down to the end of the third verse. And then down he goes again. 4th, 5th, and 6th verse. And then he picks himself up in the 7th verse. Down, up, down, up, down, up, down, up. And let's see what, let's be one of those snaggle-toothed, discontented, distressed, looking for a captain because of what he can do for me. You want to be one of the Adullamites? Well, let's just play the role tonight. The Adullamites. They came to him because of need. They came to him because of their wants. They came to him because of what he can do for them. Just maybe, since he's the anointed king, most of them had shreds of memory of God winning victory, so just maybe, maybe God will do it again. And if they join themselves to him and make him a captain, well, this is the captain they had. He starts out down the dumps. Be merciful unto me. First verse, 56th Psalm. Be merciful unto me, O God, for man would swallow me up. He fighting daily oppresseth me. Mine enemies would daily swallow me up. For they be many that fight against me, O thou most high. Now there have been some. Well, we're all going to be, you're going to be Adullamites tonight. And I'll play David's role. Just looking at you a week ago makes me cry out like this. Oppressed on every side, and all you can think of is yourself. Guilty! How do you pick himself up? Nice to see some of these verses that you've memorized because I've pulled them out and preached them for years. What time I am afraid. He was. I mean, here are these people making me their captain. They don't have anything to offer except themselves. What time I am afraid. He was. I will trust in thee. Say what you will about these discontents, debtors, distressed ones. They attach themselves to David. And they accepted him as their captain. What time I'm afraid, I will trust in thee. In God I will praise his word. In God I put my trust. I will not fear what flesh can do unto me. Now, there's no angel showing up. There's no message in tongues and interpretation. There's no Benny Hinn passing by or Oral Roberts coming into town or a big cave meeting. Just plain, hard-nosed. Mine enemies would daily swallow me up, for they be many that fight against me. O thou most high, as if God didn't know it. He took a grip on himself. What time I'm afraid, I will trust in thee. In God I will praise his word. In God I put my trust. Betakati, by the way, is the Hebrew word. I will lean on him. I will not fear what flesh can do unto me. You picked up the root batak in that batak tea, didn't you?
Yes, sir.
And then, whoosh, he took another look around. Every day they rest my words. He had trouble with people listening too. All their thoughts are against me for evil. Well, we don't do that. Anytime you judge your captain, you're doing that. Not your right to judge any more than the Israelites' right to judge. But most of the focus is outside. Saul and the kingdom that was the product of what people wanted. God didn't want them to have a king until he chose the king. They persuaded Samuel, we want to be like other nations. We want a king. Because it was the king they wanted. God made sure it was outside of his choice of king through the line of Judah. So he chose a Benjamite, Saul, and he gave promises that if Saul had been what he should have been, instead of playing the fool, he would have been a great king, and he was for a while until God took his heart from him for his rebellion and gave him a new heart. They gather themselves together. They hide themselves. They mark my steps. That essentially says, if I don't agree with the way he's going, I'm watching critically. They mark my steps. When they wait for my soul, my nephesh, my life. Shall they escape by iniquity? They seem to be winning. Your evil seems to be winning. Will they escape by iniquity? In thine anger, cast down the people, O God. And don't you sympathize with me at all? Thou tellest my wanderings. You know what's happening to me. Put thou my tears into thy bottle. God, carry a bottle of my tears around, so if you get happy, you can look at my bottle. Bottle my tears. Are you paying no attention? Are they not in thy book? Bottle my tears in case they're not in your book. Woe is me. I got a letter from somebody. Man, he tried to be the most eloquent preacher that's ever written a letter to me. One of the guys that quit. In fact, the guy that said, I can't take it, I quit. All I got from him was not one word of faith, just groveling, seeking mercy. He reminded me of a verbal flagellante. That by, now don't think the wrong thing about that, the flagellante. I'm not talking about a verbal breakwinder, although that might fit, but I think he was sincere. Just can't get out of there. Woe is me. I'm the most miserable rat in the world. I have failed. And you know, all these spiritual things. I'd make that attorney that I talked about earlier real mad, but we're not that kind of company. I'd like to slap him. Just like to slap him. And say, what's the matter with you? Why don't you just write, stop the preaching and just write a simple letter. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm an asshole and I'd like another chance. And try not to weave any scripture in. I mean, if I can't succeed, I'm going to fail in the most spiritual manner of martyrdom. I'm not going to bottle your tears. I'm not going to sit it on a shelf with a bottle of fine wine lest I grab the wrong one. But David's doing this. The captain! I know what that feels like. I've been there. It's human. But don't justify it. When I cry unto thee, then shall mine enemies turn back. This I know. And he starts the transition in that ninth verse. He's crawling back out of the slime pit of self-pity. And God will... You know, this is why everybody likes David. I admire Joseph. He's a great type of Christ, but I don't like him very well. I can't stand anybody that's that perfect. It makes me want to run and hide. He never makes any mistakes. Joseph, he just perfect. Go ahead and count. I'm not stopping. I mean, Joseph aggravates me. He never makes any mistake. I'll bet he didn't even look at Potiphar's wife and found something to cover himself up real quickly. You couldn't get him with lust. You couldn't get him with women. You couldn't get him. The only time he even appears human is when he gives forth a little bit of his heartache in that prison because he had been forgotten there, and he says he did no wrong to get himself there. Now, Joseph is what we all ought to be. But I like David. I like David. He slips and falls, but by God's grace, and what time I'm afraid I will trust, he gets up. He slips and falls, but he ain't no quitter. I mean, Joseph is so wonderful. I want to ask God in his wisdom if he even has a hint when I get to heaven of what Joseph might have done if he fell. You don't even get a glimpse of Joseph having to crawl back out of the pit. He's in a pit, but he don't. He's like Paul that when he's in prison, he's not in prison because he's a prisoner of Jesus. I mean, you know, I come around eventually, but I'd grab those bars of that cell and shake them and cuss a little bit before I got in the right spirit. I like David. He's my captain. He ends up in the right place every time, but he's got some human reactions. He crawls back up. In God will I praise his word. In the Lord I will praise his word. In God have I put my trust. I will not be afraid what man can do with me. You can see he's just shaking himself and wrestling with himself. Thy vows are upon me. Oh God, I will render praises unto thee. And I've preached a whole sermon on this. He gets into such a state of faith here, he puts the future in the past tense. Knows that? That's faith. For thou hast delivered. He's still sitting there looking at those snaggletooth debtors, discontents, and distressed ones. And Saul's still stomping around in the woods trying to find him to kill him. And David has reached a point now of faith. For thou hast delivered. Past tense. Netzel. Thou hast, you want the literal from the Hebrew, Netzel, thou hast taken away or snatched away my soul or my nephesh from death. And then the King James translators can't believe that he's putting the future in the past tense, so they change it and add the italics. Wilt not thou deliver? You see that's in italics? Scratch it out. It's added by the translators. Let me read it without that. Past tense. For thou hast delivered my soul from death, my feet from falling, that I may walk before God in the light of the living. Now that's faith. Then, kablooey blom blom. Back down. Be merciful unto me, O God. Be merciful unto me. How do you get that right after That's why the King James people try to make it two separate psalms. He didn't put a chapter and verse here. David's just pouring his heart out. I mean, you know, one look at those people that have come to make him a captain is enough to make you want to look somewhere else. And now having said, thou hast snatched me or taken me away, my soul from death, my feet from falling, that I may walk before God in the light of the living. He then, back down again. Be merciful unto me, O God. Be merciful unto me. For my soul trusteth in thee. And it's almost as though he's telling God, be merciful unto thee, unto me. My soul trusteth in thee. Then it hits him. Yea, that is true. Yea, in the shadow of thy wings will I make my refuge. My soul trusteth in thee is hasa. You know that. Run to a shelter. My soul, I'm going to coin a word into English and put it into the kind of tenses of English. My soul hasseth in thee. You understand?
Yes,
yea, in the shadow of thy wings will I make my refuge. Ahasa. Another form of the same word. In the shadow of thy wings will I make my refuge until these calamities. Who are these translators? You notice they added the word, the King James, you know, who do they think they are is what I'm saying. They added these, isn't that in italics? Scratch it out. Yea, in the shadow of thy wings will I make my refuge. In the shadow of thy wings will I make my hasa, place of refuge, until calamities be overpassed. Not just these. Until calamities, all of them, I warn you, be overpassed. I will cry unto God Most High, unto God that performeth, and again the translators add all things. God's not just limited in his performance to things. Scratch it out. All things is in italics. I will cry unto God Most High, unto God that performeth for me. Not just all things. He performeth for me. That's faith. He shall send from heaven and save me. Yishi. The same root from which you get Joshua, which matriculates as a cognate into the New Testament, they shall call his name Jesus, Joshua, Savior. For he shall save his people from their sins. He shall send from heaven and yashi me from the reproach of him that would swallow me up. Selah, think of that. God shall send forth his mercy and his truth. And then he flops again. He must have looked around and saw these people paying no attention, sitting in the cave with him. They're sitting there wondering, when's he going to help me with my debt? When's he going to alleviate my distress? When's he going to remove my discontent? And then down he goes. My soul, fourth time down, -4. My soul is among lions, and I lie even among them that are set on fire, even the sons of men, whose teeth are spears and arrows, and their tongue a sharp sword. He's just being talked about viciously. Be thou exalted, O God, above the heaven. Let thy glory be above all the earth. Are you aware? I have people do this to me. They use spiritual things to get my attention. They aren't paying any attention to God. As if God didn't already know this. Be thou exalted, O God. I'm getting ready to ask you something. Be thou exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let thy glory be above all the earth. And by the way, they have prepared a net for my steps. In other words, be thou exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let thy glory be above all the earth. However, bend over a little bit and look down here, because I don't think you know what's going on down here. They've prepared a net for my steps. My soul is bowed down. No, no, no. They've digged a pit before me. And then he begins to see the light. In the midst whereof they have fallen themselves. Think of it. Selah. And he doesn't go down anymore. My heart is fixed, O God. My heart is fixed. You notice the progress from what time I'm afraid, I will trust in the Lord, to my heart is fixed, O God. My heart is fixed. I'm trying to say to you and to me, we have this treasure in earthen vessels. Thank God for the example of David who struggles up and down. But as pastor, I've been preaching these truths through the years. I've never tried to tell you I'm perfect. I go to the Word. I take charge of myself. You think I didn't feel fear when the doctor looked at me with his Johnny Bench sitting over there as a witness in case I was going to file some lawsuit against him or the hospital? You have to have I never saw this guy. This guy comes in sitting there like Johnny Bench, dour look on his face. I've never seen him before. When the doctor's examining me with all the preliminaries, you don't have Johnny Bench there. But now he's delivering the death notice. You got to have a witness to make sure that I don't misinterpret what he says. You're going to die. 8 to 10 months, 12 months, maximum. You think I didn't feel fear? My wife squeezed my hand. You think my heart didn't go out to what she had bought into, marrying me a month and a half earlier? I mean, the early test of sickness or health till death do us part? Sure. But what time I'm afraid, I will trust in the Lord. Took me many weeks and nights of coming here and hours at home, plowing into God's Word until I could say, my heart is fixed, O God. My heart is fixed. That's why I don't want you settling on your lease like that Old Testament bunch that settled on their lease and their smell is still in them. They haven't been emptied from vessel to vessel. Some of you have not been emptied from vessel to vessel. You don't want to be emptied from vessel to vessel. You'll still be full of fear because you don't step out and you don't learn as you go along. Every time you get in the pit, you start digging yourself out. Have a little faith, God will put whatever's giving you the problems in the pit. My heart is fixed, O God. My heart is fixed. I will sing and give praise. Awake up, my glory. Awake, psaltery and harp. I will awake early. He's distressed, discontented. They must have thought the captain was crazy as he pulled the harp out in that cave and started twing, twing, twinging it. I will praise thee, O Lord, among the people. I will sing unto thee among the nations. He's got the future in view now. For thy mercy is great unto the heavens, and thy truth unto the clouds. Be thou exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let thy glory be above all the earth. I'm awake now. That was just the beginning of David's progress to his old age. Starting out with this band of distressed, discontented, debtors. He looked to God. There wasn't any hope for Faith Center. I came to restore him to faith and to respect for God ordained leadership, both of which they had lost. And I had a dream that that band of Adullamites would end up like this. You got to go to 1 Samuel to find the historic backdrop, just like I was in 1 Samuel 22. And if you want to hear how it turned out with that little band of Adullamites, distressed, debtor, discontented ones, go to 2 Samuel 23. See what happened with that 400 that had nothing to offer but themselves. Now these be the last words of David. This was my dream. That as I was faithful, the little band that gathered around in those hardship days, eventually, my last words could be like this. Now these be the last words of David. David, the son of Jesse, said, and the man who was raised up on high, the anointed of the God of Jacob, and the sweet psalmist of Israel said, the Spirit of the Lord spake by me, and his word was in my tongue. I had and still have the faith that my job is to keep his word in my tongue and teach it to you. The God of Israel said, the Rock of Israel spake to me, he that ruleth over men must be just. Tzedek, keeper of covenant, a man of truth. Ruling in the fear of God. And he shall be as the light of the morning when the sun riseth, even a morning without clouds, as the tender grass springing out of the earth, by clear shining after the rain. But here's the dream. Verse 8, those discontented, distressed, and in debt, ones that came to him and made him a captain, these be the names of the mighty men whom David had, the Tachmonite that sat in the seat chief among the captains, the same was Adino the Esnite. He lift up his spear against 800 whom he slew at one time. After him was Eleazar, the son of Dodo, the Ahohite. That means even Dodos that make him a captain can turn out pretty good. One of the three mighty men with David when they defied the Philistines that were there gathered together to battle, and the men of Israel were gone away. And they didn't run after the crowd. They stayed with their captain. He arose and smote. This is Dodo. He arose and smote the Philistines until his hand was weary and his hand clave under the sword. They had to pull his fingers off of it. And the Lord wrought a great victory that day, and the people returned after him only to spoil. Those that ran away come run back to reap the harvest of the victory. After him was Shammah, the son of Agi, the Hararite, and the Philistines were gathered together into a troop where was a piece of ground full of lentils, and the people fled from the Philistines. Someone on whom you can rely. That will keep their commitment and do their job when you're not looking. He stood in the midst of the ground and defended it alone. Defended it, I added, alone, because he was, and slew the Philistines. And the Lord wrought a great victory. He didn't know that when he took his stand. And 3 of the 30 chief went down and came to David in the harvest time back in the cave of Adullam again. But 4 different than that ragtag bunch that came, and all they had to offer was themselves. But they made him a captain and they followed him. And you heard again and again his word was in, the Lord's word was in. He will give praise to the word of the Lord. They were changed. And they went down to the cave of Adullam, and the troop of the Philistines pitched in the valley of Rephaim. And David was then in a hold, that hole in the side of the mountain of Adullam. And the garrison of the Philistines was then in Bethlehem. And David longed and said, "Oh, that one would give me drink of the water of the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate." Now the Philistines are camped out, and you can be sure they're going to be guarding the gate. And the 3 mighty men, they didn't sneak down. All they heard was David utter a... David never had a prayer of an intent to go get it or that anybody else would. He's just saying, in this cave, and it brought back memories, I'm sure. Boy, I wish I had a drink from a well in Bethlehem. And the 3 mighty men, all they do is hear that, break through the host of the Philistines. 3 of them. Break through the host. And drew water out of the well of Bethlehem that was by the gate. And took it. And brought it to David. That was my dream. That God's word, and through the ups and downs, always plowing forward in faith, that those that God would send to me would turn out like this. I haven't given up yet. Some have. I could look to my left and see, I don't often name names, but see Rick Ellington. Faithful, year in, year out, week in, week out. Always there to volunteer. Built all of the display hexagons for the Bible. When I came here, none of his sons were born. And I thought the other night, God, give me the year. As all 3 of his sons stood in front of me. They don't know what they're getting into. Saying, "Yes, sir." I hired them part-time because they're going to school. And I want them to finish. I go down the hall, see some of the kids my wife has picked up and hired to build a new staff. I still have the dream. And it's not too late for some of the old ones. that they've got to get out of that cave and their discontent and their self-centeredness and their unwillingness to trust their captain and let God change them until they can be like this. Oh, for three like this. All they had to hear was the whisper. David longed. He said, oh, that one would give me drink of the water of the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate. And the three mighty men break through the host of the Philistines and drew water out of the well of Bethlehem that was by the gate, and took it and brought it to David. Then sneak off and get some other kind of water and say, this is, we got it, here's the... They didn't decide Arrowhead Springs was just as good. I think I would do this. God knows. Nevertheless, he would not drink thereof, but poured it out unto the Lord. And he said, be it far from me, O Lord, that I should do this. Is not this the blood of the men that went in jeopardy of their lives? Therefore he would not drink it. These things did these three mighty men. And then he named some others, and Abishai. He lifted up his spear against 300 and slew them and had a name among three. Was he not most honorable of three? Therefore he was their captain. Howbeit, he attained not unto the first three that only had to hear David whisper. And at risk of life, they break through to get... He didn't have to order them as recalcitrant men who had better ideas than him. Didn't matter whether it made sense. Didn't matter whether it was practical. It's a matter with the water around Adullam. There's springs there too. Didn't matter. David wanted it. Now, David's a type of Christ. I have no illusions. I'm not Christ. I am his under-shepherd. But as I tell parents and fathers, your kids, before they're six, will learn how to relate to God if you break their rebellion while they still have small muscles. If you teach them that they can trust you and your yeas are yea and your nays are nay, God won't have as hard a time with them. I stand in Christ's place as the under-shepherd here. And as Jesus has said, if you take a cup of water in his name, you've done it unto him. It's that threshold of self-centeredness versus deacons. No matter what Abishai did, he attained not unto the first three that only had to hear the captain whisper. And Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, the son of valiant man of Kabzeel, who had done many acts, he slew two lion-like men of Moab. He went down also and slew a lion in the midst of a pit in time of snow. And he slew an Egyptian, a goodly man, old English. No, a man whose appearance was overpowering. And the Egyptian had a spear in his hand, and he went down to him with a staff and plucked the spear out of the Egyptian's hand, slew him with his own spear. These things did Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, and had a name among the three mighty men. He was more honorable than the 30, but he attained not to the first three. I still have a dream. That's what this is about this week. I came looking for the uncommon man or woman, a church full of mighty men and women who can get out of themselves. Tragic that only those people, it seems, that have nothing to lose and everything to gain come and say, I want to give my life. not that much trust in it because they're in debt, discontented, distressed. That's the way the kingdom is built, it seems. Jesus didn't have the rich young ruler turned away. It's amazing when you look at the raw material that the Lord of Glory had to build his kingdom on. And to get the really qualified, really great man, he had to go to the extremes after the resurrection of the Damascus Road experience to Saul, renamed Paul. I ain't giving up. I'd like to go forward and have you as the congregation be what you can be for God. The congregation of mighty men, those that God has given you responsibilities elsewhere. I talked about Rick. He doesn't work for me. It's pretty obvious he raised three sons that'll lay their life on the line to follow me. Oh, it'll be painful for them and me. And my wife, who's the administrative pastor. Not as easy. They haven't gone through the trials of life. What a responsibility. But I can tell you, David didn't cater to these distressed, discontented, in debt people. Or they never would have been the kind of men that could be so praised in David's last words. There's got to be some in this congregation that want to be that. That for God's sake, for the gift of his pastor, will say, I'll be the one that if I just hear him breathe the order, no questions, no ideas of my own, I'll get it done. I haven't given up on the dream. The question is, who of you will become the mighty men? And you've got 30 minutes to get on the phone and talk to me, so get on the phone. You know, I named Rick Ellington because he doesn't work for me. He's raised a family, listened to my teaching, made it his business to understand that whatever he does is done for the Lord, and raised three young men that are willing to give their lives in faith and who respect their pastor. I named him as a type because there are many of you. I've said it over the years in festivals when I've had to take out the rod that Paul lamented that he might have to do with the Corinthians. If the shoe doesn't fit, get on my side and thank God that those that deserve it are getting it. Rick has no illusions about the way I'm going to try to develop his voice. Because I've spoken very directly to him over these last 29 years when I felt he needed it. You all do. God set up this pattern. There's domitas and then there's sheep. Saints that are being equipped and sometimes driven forward by the pastor. But I've said this in the past. When I'm directing my remarks to those that got it coming, just take your share of the lumps and get on my side. But we are where we are today because there are mighty men in this congregation. I'm using men generically, both men and women. That when the chips are down, you're always there. I fault some of those that when the battle's won, you just relax and don't finish it off. Fighting Satan is like what, whether you approve of going to Iraq or not, is irrelevant. We've lost more soldiers since taking Iraq than it took to take it. And once you start, you've got to finish. That's what the faith of Jesus is about. But there are some mighty men in this congregation. The weakness has been in the staff. I can't take it. I quit. Well, you wouldn't even guard the lentil field. You couldn't make you go down in the snow to kill a lion by yourself. Let the silly lion stay down there and starve to death. I mean, there's nothing else killed around here. There's that lion down there in that pit. I'll just stay and practice and kill him too. No, that's not practical. I mean, there's a better way we can figure out. Maybe we can just shovel enough lion on him. He'll be snow on him. He'll be helpless before we go down to hit him on the head. That's what I'm talking about. I can't take it. I quit. And now let me grovel and define the neutrinos and the quarks in my wormhood. Let me say that again. Dear Pastor, let me define the neutrinos and the quarks, the electrons, the protons, the photons, and the few atoms that have assembled together in my system. And I want to tell you how terrible every single one of them are. There's repentance that's right to the point. I got out of the blood of Christ for a minute and started catering to the old man that was to die with Christ. Sunday I'll be preaching on what faith in the blood means. It boils down to God's view, which I'll elaborate Sunday. I'll borrow from old Lester Summerall, that tiger that founded the big church in Manila and then Hong Kong and Brasilia. You are what God says you are, not what you think you are and what man thinks you are. God views you through the blood of Christ. You better stay in it. And every time that self in you raises its head and you start defending it, you took yourself out of the dying with Christ. He died once, we die daily. He died a terrible death, we die an easy death daily. God looks at us through His Son sitting by His side, not just dead for our trespasses and sins in His shed blood, but raised and alive, and He looks at me through the spectacles of Christ. As long as faith... Don't write me any letters without faith in it. Faith keeps you in Christ. Because faith brings Him in you, and that puts you in Him. Now, I want this victory sealed and clenched down until we can say and mean it, not as some rote statement. We made it. You and yours and what you're doing. Because you put God first, and we together, non-staff and staff, made it through 2004. Because we are not our own. We're bought with a price. It'd be good for some of you to get on the phone and say that right now. Now get on the telephone. God said, my house shall be called a house of prayer. Some of you hardly know how to pray. What an opportunity as you give 16.8 hours a week, if that's your quota, and do security down at the cathedral, to walk up and down the aisles and around as you're doing your security walk. You're not supposed to be clustered together. That's how the burglar came and stole the ex-security people of our own. Broke in with guns, and my orders were violated. The two people that were there were never to be within 10 to 15 yards or more than that of each other. But they were clustered together, and the burglars got the drop on them, bound them with duct tape, and stole that wondrous old master painting of Abraham offering Isaac. We prayed, and months went by, and a miracle that we got it back, absent the frame, just before the thieves were going to destroy it because they couldn't market it. It had become such a news story. How could you resist the opportunity to spend 16 hours not BSing with the other people down there, going up and down the aisles, not screaming at the top of your voice, speaking lowly to God? Keep your eyes open. Walk up and down the aisles. What would you do if you were awake and some pervert child molester was seeking to get into your house? Get out of here. What do you think would happen on Sunday if that place were permeated with prayer 24 hours a day for 166 hours before the two-hour service starts? Just doing your job, cleaning, going up and down the aisles, dusting, talking to God, and rebuking the devil. Telling those perverse hosts of evil in the air about us, not in this building. Get your ass out of here. And don't do this omnipotent, omniscient stuff. Learn to talk to God like the holy man he is. Learn to talk to the devil like the rat he is. He's got a right to say to you, "Jesus I know, but I don't know you. Well, I come in Jesus' name. Get your ass out of this church. Get out of this cathedral. We're proclaiming the word to the world. Come Sunday morning at 11 o'clock, and I'm here at least these 16 hours doing my work, but at the same time I'm cursing you and praising God." Learn to pray. Make it a house of prayer. That's your ministry as volunteers as you go down there. Don't fall into some rut where you're spending the time BSing with the people. You're not in this church to make social friends. You're working together. Understand me?
Yes, sir.
Get on the phone. You got 10 more minutes to make your commitments of volunteering and your secret 16 pledges and your reservations if you haven't made them yet. Get on the phone. You know, you that have television, I'm sure you were watching between your phone calls that little colt running around mother and kicking and acting like he was king of the paddock. He had no idea what was going to happen the first time my whip hit his butt. And the first time I put a bridle and saddle and a bit in his mouth. And I hope my wife, she's listening. That's what we have in some of these new staff members. They're kids, their whole lives ahead of them. I told those three boys the other night, keep their gonads zipped in their pants. You know, the other pastors would tell them in a long-winded speech they wouldn't understand. Put God first and he'll give you. Don't listen to pheromones. I'm like David. I've had my ups and my downs. You listen to pheromones, you're going to get some of the witches I had. You trust God, he'll give you a helpmate that will love you more because of your love for God than for those other anatomical things that dumb men think are so important. That's the kind of advice they're going to get from me. Because I know the devil will find every way he can to get them. I'm not against love. I'm not against companionship. I'm not against... Used to be. I had so many bad ones. But you know, those were my down times. I'm not against marriage. God's got to be first. You aren't... You're a miserable, sorry excuse of a man if your wife can't look to you and know that God means more to you than she does. And then because you are given to your Lord, you'll listen to your Lord, who will love the wife the way he loves the church and gave himself for it. And you give her the security of unchanging, unwavering love. And she'll follow you as you follow Christ. But she ain't going to follow you in your egocentric ways. She shouldn't. I feel like I'm the only pastor in the world that should perform divorces. You're a rat, go. And you love God more than he does, or vice versa, so just get rid of him and go on. The divorce would start with Luke 14. You can't be serious. Yeah, I am. Give yourself to God. He'll claim your whole life for here, or he'll claim your whole life where you are, and this ministry will get God's portion of your time, and that'll be the most important time you spend. Now keep moving on, folks. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidencing of things not seen. Make that your goal for 2004. We're going to take you to the cathedral before this song ends. But keep tuning in at 7 o'clock every night.